Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Thank you. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto. Chapter 16. And today's text is number 2, which has no purport, and it's prose. So I'll just read the English translation for that. And then I'll do 3. It says, this is Maharaj Prakrit speaking. It says, my dear Lord, the rolling wheels of Maharaj Priyavrata's chariot created 7 ditches in which the 7 oceans came into existence. Because of these 7 oceans, Bhumandala is divided into 7 islands. You have given a very general description of their measurement, names, and characteristics. Now I wish to know of them in detail. Kindly fulfill my desire. So this has no purport, and it is going to be discussed in detail as this chapter progresses. So I'll just leave it at that and move on to the next translation, which does have a purport. So Maharaj Prakrit continues. When the mind is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his external feature, made of the material modes of nature, the gross universal form, it is brought to the platform of pure goodness. In that transcendental position, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who in his subtler form is self-effulgent and beyond the modes of nature. Oh my Lord, please describe vividly how that form which covers the entire universe is perceived. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Prakrit had already been advised by his spiritual master, Sukadeva Goswami, to think of the universal form of the Lord. And therefore, following the advice of his spiritual master, he continuously thought of that form. The universal form is certainly material, but because everything is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately nothing is material. Therefore, Prakrit Maharaj's mind was saturated with spiritual consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated, Prapanchikitaya buddhya hadisambandi vastuna mumukshubi parityago vairagyam palgu katyate. Everything, even that which is material, is connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, everything should be engaged in the service of the Lord. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur translates this verse as follows. Hari sevaya yaha haya anukula vishaya baliya tahara tyage haya bula. One should not give up anything connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking it material or enjoyable for the material senses. Unquote. Even the senses, when purified, are spiritual. When Maharaj Prakrit was thinking of the universal form of the Lord, his mind was certainly situated on the transcendental platform. Therefore, although he might not have had any reason to be concerned with detailed information of the universe, he was thinking of it in relationship with the Supreme Lord. And therefore, such geographical knowledge was not material but transcendental. Elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 5th Chapter, Text 20, Narada Muni has said, Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivetara. The entire universe is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it appears different from him. Therefore, although Prakrit Maharaj had no need for geographical knowledge of this universe, that knowledge was also spiritual and transcendental because he was thinking of the entire universe as an expansion of the energy of the Lord. In our preaching work also, we deal with so much property and money and so many books bought and sold. But because these dealings all pertain to the Krishna consciousness movement, they should never be considered material. That one is absorbed in thoughts of such management does not mean that he is outside of Krishna consciousness. If one rigidly observes the regulative principle of chanting 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day, his dealings with the material world for the sake of spreading Krishna the Krishna consciousness movement are not different from the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Om Aginati Madanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pravuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadar Shri Vasudi Govinda Bhakti Brinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Srila Prabhupada's mentioning here in his purport that the universal form is certainly material, but because everything is an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately nothing is material. So this is a very high understanding, but at the same time, it's something that we are introduced to very early in our study of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the Bhagavad Gita, right there in the seventh chapter. Beginning with text 4, Krishna explains, he says, Bhumir apo nalo vayu kammano buddhir evacha ahankara iti yame bina prakritir astada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, these eight are my separated material energies. And he goes on to say, Apariyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta maha baho yayedam daryate jagat. That besides this inferior energy of mine, Arjuna, is the superior energy, which is the living entities who are struggling hard in this universe and maintaining it, sustaining it, like that. So, you know, in this way, Krishna lays it out. And then, of course, he goes on to say, Etad yonini bhutani sarvaniti upadhalaya aham krishnastra jagata prabhava pralayastanam. That of all that is spiritual and all that is material, know for certain that I am both its origin and its dissolution. And then Matak Paratanam Nanyat Kinchit Asti Dinanjaya Mai Sarvamidam Protam Sutre Manigana Iva. That there's no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung upon a thread. So, right there in the Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, Krishna is explaining how, you know, the different energies and what they are and how they're constituted and how ultimately they're coming from him and dependent upon him. You know, everything rests upon him as pearls are strung upon a thread. And so it's, you know, it's not a new idea. It's not something that's first, you know, being introduced here. As a matter of fact, Prabhupada actually later in his purport he makes reference to Narada Muni's teachings to Srila Vyasadeva in the 5th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where Narada Muni makes the same point. Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Evetaro, that this material, this cosmic manifestation is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada goes on to point out in his purport that even what's so-called matter, when it's used in the service of spirit, it regains its original spiritual quality. And once again, this is, you know, not something that's being newly introduced in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter. I think it's text 24, I believe, in the purport. Prabhupada says, matter dovetailed for the cause of the absolute truth regains its spiritual quality. So that idea is also being presented there. And also in that chapter that I was just mentioning, in the 5th chapter of the Bhagavatam, where Narada Muni is instructing Vyasadeva, shortly after he makes that point about how the cosmic manifestation is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he goes on and gives Narada the instruction, O good soul, does not a thing apply therapeutically, cure a disease which was caused by the very same thing? So that's the same point appears again there. And Prabhupada specifically mentions here, because you know this particular section of the Bhagavatam is dealing with it, this, he makes this point about where was it now? Something with geographical knowledge, but I'm just trying to. I'm not finding it all of a sudden, but he uses the phrase such geographical knowledge. I just read it, but I can't find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. Okay. no need for such geographical knowledge. I think he mentions it twice. Anyway, I'm not finding the one I, the part I'm thinking of. It's, I know it's there. Yeah, I guess maybe that's what it was. Oh yeah, that must be what it is. So that knowledge is that knowledge was also spiritual and transcendental because he was thinking of the entire universe as an expansion of the energy of Lord. Right. So yeah, even that geographical knowledge, Maharaj Prigat was inquiring about geographical knowledge, but it was spiritual, not material, because it had a connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then in the next paragraph, Prabhupada goes on to point out. He's making this point about how if somebody is, you know, chanting the 16 rounds and following the four regulative principles and whatever their dealings with the material energy for the purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness is not to be considered outside the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So I had this experience dealing with geographical knowledge. Not of the universe, but of Los Angeles. And I think it's in the same category. Over the last couple, I stopped this program recently, but over, for a couple of years I was doing this program where we were doing all these Latino-Hispanic neighborhoods. And so at one point I was getting very much absorbed in charts, which were, giving information, how do you call it, demographics, what percent of the populations lives in what neighborhood. And I was very carefully studying those charts. And then I was also studying maps, how to get to these areas. And so I was getting very absorbed in geographical knowledge of Los Angeles. And, but I didn't find it was something that was detracting from my Krishna consciousness. Actually, sometimes it was just the opposite. I remember a lot of times we'd be driving through a neighborhood, and when I would see, the writing on the wall, they have the expression, you can see the handwriting. When I could see the handwriting on the wall was in Spanish, I would become very enlivened. I'd see like Ponderia or Lavenderia or something, and I started becoming very excited, like, woohoo, we got a good one here, So the area was geographical knowledge, but because it was related to Sankirtan. As I saw, Spanish language meant good Sankirtan, good book distribution. So because it was in relation to Krishna, or, in relation to the service, it was not something that was mundane, but it was enlivening, transcendentally enlivening, just, dealing with this geographical knowledge. So that was an interesting, observation for me. And, and then once again, in this last purport, Prabhupada makes the point that if one rigidly observes the regulative principles of chanting 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra every day, his dealings with the material world for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness movement are not different from the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. But, I think the whole phrase is important, but one part of it we should really focus on is it's for the sake of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. There's this interesting, funny, humorous anecdote that, well, it really happened, but, that devotees sometimes tell. Prabhupada was chanting and on beads, and there was a devotee with him. I can't remember who it was. But, he was chanting, and then at one point he went like as if he was finishing a round, and he, put the beads back in the bead bag and set them down, and he said, "Now I've finished my 16 rounds. Now I can do anything I damn well please," I think he said. Was the actual expression he used at the time. So, he was being facetious, I believe. That basically he was making the point that, no, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's not like when you finish your 16 rounds and, okay, that's it. And you can, no. It's, that's, okay, you did that, but then you have to be, it doesn't end there. That's the beginning, It's 16 rounds is which is like, somebody training for a fight or something like that. I can't think of the appropriate analogy at the moment, but it's like you're fueling up or loading a gun or something like that. You're just getting yourself ready to do what you got to do that day for Krishna. So it's not like that's when you've finished your 16 rounds, that's that. So in the same way, we shouldn't be thinking that, okay, I've chanted 16 rounds and now I can just go out and interact with the material world and, in any way I please, damn well please, as Prabhupada said, and I'm protected. No. And that's when you're out there interacting with the material energy for the purpose of, as Prabhupada points out here, spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, then if you've chanted your 16 rounds and you're following the four regulative principles, then you could feel protected. You can understand you're protected, and your activities are as good as the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So that's, I think, an important point to remember. Another thing is that, so by making this statement here, Prabhupada is basically, he's also trying to encourage us in preaching, and it's emphasizing the importance of preaching, because that statement should relieve the apprehension of devotees who might be feeling that, well, I'm kind of, I'm worried maybe that by going out and interacting with the material energy, I imagine that's one aspect of, what Prabhupada's trying to communicate here. By going out and interacting in the material energy, maybe I'm going to become contaminated or compromised somewhere in my Krishna consciousness. It's going to, have an adverse effect on my progressive development of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada's trying to reassure devotees here that no, that won't be the case. If you've chanted your 16 rounds and you're following four regulative principles, you that won't happen. That won't happen. So we shouldn't be, fearful of interacting with the material energy, for the purpose of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, providing we've been careful to observe these basic principles of Krishna consciousness, the basic regulative principles. And more than that, we should not only not be afraid, but we should be very the opposite, very enthusiastic to do that. It's very important. It's very important for our own development of Krishna consciousness, and it's very important for the development of the Krishna consciousness movement. Logically, how's the Krishna consciousness movement going to spread unless we're very proactive? We've got to be ready to go out there and interact with people to give them Krishna consciousness. And if we do that, then we'll have a successful movement. And if we don't do that, we're going to have big problems. And just like this is kind of an example, it's an analogy. In Mississippi, back in, I think it was about 1976. I'm not positive about the date, but Prabhupada visited New Taliban. And at one point, he was being taken on a tour of New Taliban by the then temple president. I believe his name was Nityananda. So, they were walking, and I'm giving this not verbatim, but just the gist of it, which is pretty accurate. So, he was showing him different things, and Prabhupada was going, And at about three different points in the conversation, Prabhupada said, "And the bullocks, how will they be used?" And Nityananda said, "Well, for plowing, Prabhupada, for plowing the field, for plowing." And then, three different times, Prabhupada brought that up. Now, it's such an obvious question, right? But Prabhupada asked it, if you go, you can go in the Vedabase and find it. Three different times, Prabhupada said, "And the bullocks, how will..." So, and Satsarup, in the biography of Prabhupada, he makes the point that, Prabhupada was trying to drum that into their heads, that you got to use these bullocks. If you don't use them, you will abuse them. And, even the Karmis have a saying like that, if you don't use it, you lose it. Or if you don't use it, you'll abuse it. Because you don't value it. You see, if you don't use something, you're not going to value it. And if you don't value it, you're either going to just get rid of it or abuse it. See? So that was the case with the bullocks. He was making that point. You've got to use these bullocks. Otherwise, you're just going to sell them off and then they're going to be slaughtered or whatever. Right? So in the same way, with even with our own Krishna consciousness, we have to, if we don't use it, then we're going to lose it. It's going to shrivel up. I think there's some statement, I can't remember the Sanskrit for it or even exactly how it goes, but something to the effect that a Brahmin, if a Brahmin doesn't share his knowledge, it dries up. It kind of shrivels up. It evaporates like that. There's something to that effect. Some statement like that. And Prabhupada actually told Mother Yamuna that, you're a good cook now? Okay, now you have to teach what you know to others. Otherwise, you'll become envious. And that was an instruction he gave to her. And that's how it works, obviously. Prabhupada said that. That's how it works. When you have something, and if you've got to try to share it with other people, otherwise you don't have that. Your attitude will become influenced by the material energy, and that it won't be an asset for you anymore. So... So this particularly relates to us. We have to make new devotees. And so I was thinking, well, how come? We're not, we don't have this as like a top priority. And I was reflecting and just trying to come up with some different ideas. One idea that occurred to me is like along the line of the bullocks. You know, if you don't use it, you'll just want to sell them off or like that. I was thinking, well, maybe we've come to think that we don't need new devotees. You know, it's not so important. You know, and just some thoughts that came to my mind as well. And these, might be very might be good and might not be so important. But Prabhupada, in the books and the lectures and a lot of his talks, he talks about how at 50 years old, devotees are supposed to retire. From family life, and then go into vanaprast, and then eventually into sannyas ashram. Practically speaking, I think what the vision was that devotees should be, after they've matured, should be wanting to move into more preaching, and they're not staying so much in one place and sort of making a lot of endeavor to make a nice comfortable situation for themselves. That's not the Vedic. Paradigm. The Vedic paradigm is that you get married at a certain age, you have your family, and you bring them up, and then the husband, the man moves on. He moves, to at least focus more on his spiritual development. So for us, members of the Krishna conscious movement, that means getting out there. I think Prabhupada was kind of hopeful that the senior people would be out and about, traveling around and giving guidance to younger members. So, somehow maybe we're not taking that seriously enough. I mean, I'm indicting myself by saying this because I'm, I'm one of the people. I'm here. And then if we were really serious about doing that, those of us who were like in late 50s and coming into the 60s and like that, then we'd be thinking, well, we've got to get replacements. We've got to come up with replacements for ourselves because, if I'm going to be out traveling around, preaching and here, there, and everywhere, that means I have to have somebody doing what I'm doing here. I got to be, so therefore we need new, we need new people. And so that's one thought. And then following along, Adam, now I said, well, why aren't we thinking like that? And why aren't we aren't in that consciousness? And I was thinking, well, it's maybe we're not strictly. It goes back to not being Krishna conscious enough. We're not strictly following Prabhupada's instructions enough, such as just the basic things of like, reading his books, everything. And because if we were in proper Krishna consciousness, maybe we'd be more enthusiastic, inclined. We'd feel more of an urge, more of an inclination to want to get out there and share this with other people in general. So that's just a thought on that. I guess it would be called complacency. So we have to be very careful of that because complacency is like it's just like a slow decaying type of thing. It's like rust. Rust doesn't happen overnight. When something gets rusty, it's like it just gradually decays, and then finally one day you just lean up against your car and your elbow goes through your bumper like that. It's got to that point. But that's kind of how it works. So you've got to be got to be careful that you have to sort of try to nip it in the bud. Was a friend of mine who was anyway some sort of a businessman. He told me this story. I can't remember. This is actually an experiment they did where they put frogs in a tank, in a big sort of a thing, and with water in it, and they raised the temperature gradually, like 1 degree, and then they'd leave it for some time, and then another degree. And they'd leave it, and they kept doing that, and the frogs. I mean, they live in the water, but there's probably a certain temperature that they're comfortable with. Anyway, they kept raising it 1 degree, and the frogs. What happened was, they didn't jump out. What happened was, even when it started getting uncomfortable, because obviously it started getting uncomfortable at some point, they just kind of kept, they kept getting used to it. They made the adjustment, and they stayed there. And, they must have been thinking, well, it's just kind of getting a little uncomfortable here, but it would be more uncomfortable to jump out, so I'll live with it, And they just kept doing that, and the frogs didn't jump out. They just boiled, they just died in the water. The boiled frog phenomena, I guess you'd call it. They didn't jump out. So it kind of works like that. They say one of the nature of living entities takes the path of, a lot of times, path of least resistance. You see? So, you know, we're here, it's kind of comfortable, nice, New Dwarka, Southern California, and, you know, yeah, the intensity, the enthusiasm of, you know, the preaching fervor is kind of coming down, well, but anyway, it'll get better, and, you know, if you have that, because we don't, at no one point do we feel the urgency that, hey, we've got to do something about this. You know, things, the enthusiasm's going down. We've got to do something. We've got to turn this around somehow. If we just kind of like, at each point, we just kind of go, well, okay, anyway. But at some point, we're just, it'll be nothing, you know. No, you know, Prabhupada said when that happens, and I can't remember, some quote like that about how there'll be no more Hari Hari Bowl. I can't remember. How the statement begins. Yeah, thank you. There it is. Yeah, so I'm not just making this up. Prabhupada said, without preaching, the Sri Vigraha will become Galagraha, which means a burden around the neck, and then there'll be no more Hari Hari Bowl. So, you know, Prabhupada, the warning was there from Prabhupada that we have to be concerned, you know, to really keep that spirit of, we got to get out there, got to preach, got to try to help these conditioned souls become Krishna conscious, because it's compassion, but it's also a matter of our own survival. Without doing that, we're going to be in trouble spiritually at some point. And now to kind of make it, you know, nice and present the positive side, but if we do it, it's actually a very enlivening. Like I've been using this, it's a gimmick, you know, of when I'm distributing books, of asking people if they've seen this movie Avatar. And but it's actually kind of been helped me in my book distribution, because what I do is I start off, like I always do, give people a compliment, and then the very next thing I do is I say, hey, by the way, did you see that movie Avatar? And if they say, most people say yeah, a lot of people say yeah, and even if they say no, I say, well, but you heard about it, right? And they say, everybody said yeah. I said, well, I think it the idea came from this, and I, you know, show them the Bhagavad Gita, and they're looking at me, you know, and I say, I open to the Sanskrit. I say, see, Avatar is a Sanskrit word. It means somebody who descends. It means one who descends from, you know, from the spiritual world to the material world. And they're just at this point still listening. And then I show them the picture of the avatars, you know, the Das Avatar with Krishna in the middle and Buddha and Ram and the string of Rahakorma, that picture. So I show them that picture. And I say, here, I mean, I said, yeah, these are us, for instance. I said, you know, you probably know some of these. You know Buddha, right? And they go, yeah. I say, Ram? And they go, about half of them say yeah, half of them say no. It doesn't matter. And I say, I think the movie had something to do with Krishna, because all those people in the movie were blue, right? And they go, yeah, yeah. I say, see, and Krishna's blue. Now, as I said, it's a gimmick. It's a gimmick in that it's not really like preaching to them in a very, you know, sophisticated way about Krishna, but just the fact that I'm even getting to mention Krishna, it's enlivening. And sometimes when one out of every 5 or 10 people or something like that, you get somebody who's actually favorable, and then I could say things like, yeah, it's actually, you notice Krishna's in the middle because he's what's called avatari. He's the source of all the avatars. All the avatars come from him. And then I'll say something like, as a matter of fact, this book is the teachings of Krishna. And like, you know, little by little, I'm just kind of saying more and more about Krishna. And I love it. It's great. And it's enlivening to have that opportunity to talk about Krishna. And also, I find that because I'm using it, see, I'm using the philosophy to distribute the book. And actually, Prabhupada said, we should try to distribute these books on the merit of the book. That was one instruction about book distribution that Prabhupada gave. Distribute the book on the merit of the book. So I'm distributing more Bhagavad Gita's. That's, in all honesty, that's staying about the same. But like now, I'm more interested in the Bhagavad Gita. Like just, you know, I found myself the other day, I was looking at these verses, you know, Ajopi San Aviyatma Bhutanam Ishvaropi San. I was thinking, well, all right, let me read something about Krishna here. Let me know more about Krishna, because maybe I'll find some other far out thing to tell people about Krishna. And in this way, I'm becoming more absorbed in Krishna because I'm talking to people about Krishna. So I'm wanting to know more about Krishna. So I have something more interesting to tell them about it. I've come up with this other idea. I haven't exactly worked out how to work it into the presentation yet. Where I want to ask people, hey, what do you think? Do you think there's life on other planets? Do you believe in there's life on other planets? And I'm trying to use that to work out in a way to show them the first verse in the fourth chapter. Imam vivashvate yogam proktavanaham aviyam vivasvan manave prahor imam ikshvakave pravit, that where Krishna says, in the beginning I instructed this imperishable science to the sun god Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, and Manu instructed it to Ikshvaku, the father of mankind. So I'm going to show him that, and I haven't quite got it yet, but, and then say, hey, look, yeah, this book has something about life on other planets. But the principle is there. I mean, these might be kind of, as I say, gimmicky and corny, but the idea is there. Like, for instance, even in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, that that same fifth chapter, or maybe it was the fourth chapter, Vyasadeva was there and he was feeling kind of despondent, and Narada Muni appeared on the scene, and they had a little talk, and he asked him, "Well, what's wrong? What's going on?" And he said, "I don't know. I'm feeling kind of bummed out." He said, "Why? You just did all these." Compiled all the Vedic literatures, you did so many things, and Vyasadeva says, "I don't know, you're the spiritual master, you tell me what's..." He said, "Well, okay, since you're asking, you're submissive, you've neglected to directly glorify Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and because of that, that's why you're feeling how you're feeling, even despite the fact that you've done so much great work compiling all these Vedic literatures." So, and then of course he went on to, give us the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was fully satisfied in doing so. So, it's really important that we try to get out there and preach. And the more we could, and the more we could do it by directly glorifying Krishna, or distributing the books, or distributing the philosophy or the movement on the merit of the movement, or the merit on which is the philosophy. I think the better it's going to be for our spiritual life, and the more powerful, the more potent it'll be as well. And one last thing, I can't see the time, so I don't know, but I'll just put this is the last point, and then I'll just end. That by the down a couple of weeks ago, I think it was last weekend or the weekend before, we were down at Laguna Beach because they had their Gopunim celebration there, whatever they exactly call it. So Jagaranga and his wife had the foresight. They invited this boy we met from Northridge, Cal State Northridge. They invited him to come down there. So he showed up with this friend, and so when I saw him there, I just realized, well, okay, I got to, I can't just stay here like normal. I was there the same day, so I got to do something to try to help this fellow, get the most out of this experience. So what I did was, Krishna, gave me the intelligence that I got to introduce him to as many of the, leading devotees as I possibly can. So I just spent the whole day taking him around and introducing him to everybody. I introduced him to Indradyumna Maharaj. He already met Jai Pataka Maharaj, so I, had him say hello to Jai Pataka Maharaj again. I introduced him to Indradyumna Maharaj, Judhakarma Babu, Bhadrina Ryan, Giriraj Maharaj. I mean, everybody. Whenever I saw, some senior Prabhupada disciple, I introduced him. Ratna Bhushan, and it was great. I loved it. It was like I felt not only could I see that this is the best thing I could be doing for this person to help him in his Krishna consciousness, because he had a nice interaction with all these different people, and the devotee, all these different devotees who I introduced him to, I could see that they were kind of enlivened. They liked meeting an intelligent young man who was interested in Krishna consciousness. And Ratna Bhushan has asked me about two or three times since. He says, "Hey, have you following up on that boy Mark? Is he?" You keeping in touch with him? I said, "Yeah, we are. We have a plan to keep cultivating him." But and also, I felt closer to not only to Mark, but I felt like that was the best way I could associate with my God brothers, because I felt more like than it was better. It was a more satisfying association than just kind of saying, "Hey, how Harbo Prabhu, how you doing? What are you up to? Blah 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 blah." The same old. This was like I felt a better way to interact with my God brothers than just kind of doing that, that usual type of thing. So that was nice. So, like Prabhupada says, preaching is the essence. I don't know. I can't see the time. Is that probably about time? Okay, so I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments or complaints or anything about any of these points? Archita Babu.
Hi, Krishna. Thank you for a very interesting class. My question has to do with the line between being interested in this material manifestation, since it's related to Krishna, and not being attracted. Because we know if you're attracted to the higher planetary systems, you may have to stop there before you get out. You know, here, Pariksit Maharaj has said that you've given me a synopsis, now give me more detail. And similarly, with Narad Muni and, well, not quite, because Narad Muni had, he told Vyasadeva that your good self knows all of this, I've only given you a synopsis. So he didn't have to go into further detail, because Vyasadeva already knew everything about the universal situation. But how do we guard against, because, you know, we're going to get more of an explanation now in the fifth canto, and there are so many stories about the wonderful aspects of the universe. How do we develop an interest in going beyond a synopsis? In other words, getting into more detail about the universal situation, but not to be attracted to this external manifestation.
Well, I'll take a shot at that. I mean, I'm sitting there because the only thing I can think of is that, you know, like right here in the end of his purport, Prabhupada says, our dealings with the material world for the sake of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement are not different from the spiritual cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So if we can, you know, this information can be used to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Actually, that was an important part of Prabhupada's preaching strategy, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, Prabhupada wanted a model of the, you know, in Mayapur, he wanted a Vedic planetarium there, and also I think he wanted a Vedic planetarium in Washington, D.C. And the model for the Vedic planetarium was supposed to come from the fifth canto. And as it wasn't, though, we were going to come up with some, you know, watered-down thing based on the Western ideas. No, Prabhupada wanted the universe presented, the understanding of the universe presented as it's described in the fifth canto. So, I mean, if somebody had that sort of an interest in this information, that he can see it in some way, either specifically in that way or in some other way, how it can be used in the preaching of Krishna consciousness, then I don't think you're going to run the risk of, you know, becoming attached to it in a material way. It's part of the preaching. As far as Prabhupada was concerned, it was very important because that was going to be the, you know, Mayapur is supposed to be a big spiritual city in India, and that's the center of the whole thing, the Vedic planetarium. And that's the information for how that planetarium, you know, what's supposed to be displayed in there is supposed to be coming from the fifth canto. So that's the best I can come up with. Is that kind of direct? Yeah, Prabhu. Mukunda, not Prabhu.
No. Thank you for the nice class. Following up from Archita Prabhu's question, the verses you quoted and mainly the logic of that whole argument about prapanchakitaya buddhya hari sambandhina vastana, that anything that can be used in Krishna's service, if we reject that thing, then we're actually practicing phalgu vairagya, lightweight vairagya, you can say. So I was just thinking that the sahajiyas actually use this very logic to justify behaviors that's actually not conducive to Krishna consciousness, according to our charges. So his question is actually pretty important, and just wondering if you can say a few more things about that.
Well, there's that verse by Rupa Goswami, if I'm understanding your question correctly, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatrikam Vidimanam Ahaitiki Hadeya Blaktir Utpat Yaiva Kalpate. That has to be done according to the direction of the Shruti, the Smriti, the Puranas, you know, all the Vedic literatures, and you know, the bona fide spiritual masters, the bona fide spiritual authorities. Otherwise, it's upatyaiva kalpate, it's a disturbance to the society of devotees, and certainly, and possibly the society at large. We'll be doing a disservice to the society at large because, you know, misrepresenting what the proper execution of devotional service of Krishna consciousness is. So that would be my answer to that, that it has to be done, but according to the guidance of qualified spiritual authorities.
Yeah, thank you. And then secondly, as you were mentioning, that you found that just by talking about Krishna and with regard to Avatar movie or whatever, you found yourself being more attracted by the Bhagavad Gita and wanted to find out more about Krishna that you could tell people with regards to Sankirtana. it brought to my mind a nice analogy that Rupa Goswami gives in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He says that just as the rain that rains on the ocean is raining water that comes from the ocean, so in the same way, the practice of devotional service actually nourishes our endeavor to practice devotional service at the same time.
Bobby. Okay, there we go. Yeah. Just on that point that, you know, talking is important. Prabhupada says in one purport in the Bhagavad Gita that speech is the most important quality of any man. And I just remembered one incident that is relevant to this. When I was, a bhakta, a very new devotee, I was in the Brooklyn, Henry Street Temple in Brooklyn, and I went into the temple president's office, who's Gopijana Balaba at the time. And I remember he had a sign in his office, you know, about so big. And it said, nonsense talk breeds nonsense thought, breeds nonsense action, breeds birth, death, old age, and disease. And I remember saying to him, commenting to him, I said, that doesn't sound right. Shouldn't it be nonsense thought breeds nonsense talk? You know, I thought it was the other way around. And he said, he got very upset with me. You know, he was temple president. I was a new devotee, bhakta. I said, what do you know? I think he used stronger language than that. What do you know? You know, this is the statement of one of the predecessor acharyas. And, you know, you're just, you know. So I said, oh, okay, excuse me. So, I mean, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it works that way. Nonsense talk breeds nonsense thought, breeds nonsense action, birth. So, you know, the opposite obviously is true as well. Krishna conscious talk is going to breed Krishna conscious thought and then Krishna conscious action. You know. So it starts from the tongue. And Prabhupada would make that point so often that, you know, devotional service begins with the tongue, tasting and vibrating. Vibrating means chanting Hare Krishna and talking, you know, trying to explain about Krishna consciousness to other people. So it's, you know, a very important point like that. Okay, thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.